All men, dear friends, all men like to be free. Free to roam, free to adventure. There is something of the nomad in every one of us. We do not like to be fenced in, to be narrowly confined to our daily tasks, to be enclosed in a drab circle of routine. The warden of a penitentiary asked some newly arrived inmates what work they would like to do in the prison. One said that he would like to work in the laundry. Another that he would like to work in the kitchen. Still another in the machine shop. One convict, under a life sentence, said, "Mr. Warden, if it is all the same to you, I'd like to be a traveling salesman for the institution." But I ask myself, is human freedom essentially a matter of roaming, of adventuring, of traveling carefree through life? And are all life's fences and enclosures, routines and disciplines, are they all bad for us? Man is born free, and everywhere he is in chains. This is how Jean-Jacques Rousseau began his famous treatise, Social Contract, which so greatly influenced the 18th century and the generation of the French Revolution. Man is born free, and everywhere he is in chains. Man is good by nature, he maintained. He is made vile by institutions. The state of nature is the true state of freedom. And the natural man has been spoiled and enslaved by the arts of civilization. The life of the savage, which he extolled, the life of the savage was a life of simplicity. And the life of man of his day, that is the day in which Rousseau wrote his treatise, he said, is a life of artificiality. And so back to nature, if you wish to be free. Now, this proved to be a very appealing thesis to a restless and revolutionary age, which was trying to get rid of so many shackles, political, social, economic. But as later studies of primitive man, aborigines proved, it was a false thesis. Man is not born free and is not by nature entirely good. Nor is the life of the savage a life of sweet simplicity. The savage man too is born into a society and is dependent upon his social environment, which restricts and determines his every movement. From infancy to death, he is subject to rigid tribal customs and taboos, to the tyranny of chief and medicine man, to nameless fears and superstitions, and to the ever-present dread of the unknown. The noble savage who ran wild and carefree in the woods was simply the figment of imagination of men who thought that they could move forward by going backward to a golden age which never existed. Now, the fact of the matter is that man gained in freedom as he became more civilized. Civilization may be said to be man's progress towards emancipation from all forms of unreasonable social controls and inhibitions, and the substitution for them of intelligent forms of disciplines for the sake of larger freedom. Social life, that is organized community life, must always have its restraints if it is not to return to chaos and anarchy. It is the nature of these restraints which is the true criterion. Are they necessary? Are they helpful? Do they advance or retard man's progress? Organized society must always have its institutions: government, civil authority, courts, schools. Otherwise, it simply cannot function. But are they, these institutions, are they repressive? Or do they release human energies for the attainment of the greater good, for the greater numbers? Freedom, therefore, my friends, is something which must be achieved. It is not a natural endowment. It is not a natural endowment of man of which he was deprived at some stage in his history. Now, many centuries before Rousseau, there was a school of philosophers known as the Stoics, who greatly influenced a whole age, the Hellenistic age, and whose teaching, by the way, are also reflected in rabbinic ethics and in Christian ethics. And these Stoics maintained not that the uncivilized man alone was free, but that the wise man alone is free. They too taught that man should live consistently with nature, but by that they meant that man should do nothing which right reason, which pervades all nature, forbids him to do. That he should live reasonably, in harmony with the laws of nature. They maintain that virtue is the supreme good and is the law which governs the universe, and that only the virtuous man who follows a rule of life which is dictated by courage and wisdom and justice and temperance, that only the virtuous man is happy free. And only a rigorous training of the will make a man free. Mankind, they said, may be divided into two classes, the free and the slaves. And they may also be designated as the wise and the fools. And the wise alone are free. There was a great Jewish philosopher who lived about that time in the first century of the Common Era by the name of Philo. Philo, the eminent Jewish philosopher of Alexandria, who interpreted the Bible philosophically to the Greek-speaking world by the use of the allegorical method. Philo wrote an interesting treatise on the subject of freedom. He called it, "Every Good Man is Free." And this treatise, in spite of having been written nearly 2,000 years ago, may still reward the reader today. It is definitely under the influence of Stoic thought. And Philo writes, and I read you a sentence or two, there are two kinds of slavery. Slavery is applied in one sense to bodies, and in another to souls. Bodies have men for their masters. Souls have their vices and their passions for masters. And the same is true of freedom. One freedom produces security of the body from men of superior strength. The other sets the mind at liberty from the domination of passions. If the soul is driven by desire, or enticed by pleasure, or diverted from its course by fear, or shrunken by grief, or helpless in the grip of anger, it enslaves itself and makes him whose soul it is a slave to a host of masters. But if it vanquishes ignorance with good sense, incontinence with self-control, cowardice with courage, and covetousness with justice, it gains not only freedom from slavery, but the gift of ruling as well. No slave is really happy, says Philo. But what greater misery is there than to live with no power over anything, including oneself? But the wise man is happy, ballasted and freighted by his high morality, which confers power upon everything. And so beyond all doubt and of sheer necessity, the good man is free. This is what Philo wrote. Many centuries later, the foremost Hebrew poet of the Middle Ages, Yehuda Halevi, formulated the same belief of Philo in another way. Halevi said, "The slaves of time are slaves indeed. The servant of God, he alone is free." In the sayings of the fathers, the Pirkei Avot, which is part of our Mishnah, our sages summarize the philosophy of freedom in an incisive homily. It is written, they said, in the Bible, it is written, and the tables, that is the Ten Commandments, and the tables were the work of God, and the writing was the writing of God, graven upon the tables. Charut al haluchot. Read not charut, they said, graven, but rather cherut, freedom, For no man is free who does not labor in the Torah, that is to say, who does not accept the yoke of the Torah, who does not observe the ethical disciplines of the Torah. Charut, Cherut. Freedom is a form of self-constraint. Who is a strong man? They ask. He who subdues his passions. Who is a rich man? Not the man who is constantly reaching out for more and more to accumulate, to hold, to acquire more and more. That's not a rich man. Who is the rich man? He who is satisfied with his lot. Now, my dear friends, all men want to be free. Yet most of the tragedies of our private and public life come from the abuse and misuse of freedom. Selfishness, for example, is a gross form of freedom. Why should I be restrained by considerations of the rights and the needs of other people? I mean to look after myself. Irresponsibility is another gross form of freedom. Why should I tie myself down to hard and exacting responsibilities, to unpleasant duties and obligations? I'd rather be free. Indifference is still another coarse form of freedom. Why should I bother about other people's troubles and worries? I know that there are people in the world who are poor, who are suffering, who are persecuted. I know that there is evil and crime and corruption in my community, in my country, and in the world. But why should I bother about it? Life is too short. I want to be free. Last Saturday, there was laid to rest a woman who's passing the whole world mourn, high and low, east and west, all colors, all creeds, united in paying memorial tribute to Eleanor Roosevelt. They called her the First Lady of the World. Why? She held no high office. She was vested with no scepter and crown. No one was constrained to do her bidding. What was the secret of her universal appeal and influence? In my humble judgment, it was this. She was a free soul who willingly assumed duties and obligations which no longer made her free, carefree. Now she possessed all that mortals normally crave: a patrician lineage, distinction, wealth. But she allowed none of these to take her spirit captive, to narrow her vision, to isolate her from the rest of humanity, or to constrict her active sympathies for the less fortunate of the earth. She was not satisfied to stay where she was at the top She was not content to remain within the privileged and enviable security of her station. She went out into the broken highways of the world, championing unpopular causes, working to alleviate human suffering, to rectify social wrongs, to bring about clean government, to achieve world peace. An open mind, an open heart, a free spirit. Eleanor Roosevelt voluntarily placed herself within the bondage of commitments and human ideals. She never said to herself, "I wish to be free." She abandoned what might have been a pleasant career of ease for an exacting and arduous career of duties and social responsibility. This, in my judgment, dear friends, is what true freedom is. Many a broken home is the result of men or women who want to be free and who simply do not know what freedom is, nor how it can be achieved or conserved. Many men and women obtain divorce because they find the demands of their married life too irksome, and then return to marry a second time. They assure themselves that in the second marriage, they will enjoy the freedom which they did not find in the first. Samuel Johnson, on hearing that his friend who had been most unfortunate in his first marriage was about to get married a second time, Samuel Johnson remarked, "Alas, another instance of the triumph of hope over experience." The men and women who rush to the divorce courts often are oblivious of the simple truth that one must give up something to be free. That one cannot be free without effort and without sacrifice. And that to be free, one must be fit to be free. Now it is hard to learn that the simple lesson that freedom is a condition which exists only on the moral law, and that it is achieved through substantial self-restraints and self-denials. And this is true of nations as well as of individuals. Political liberty, for example, political freedom, is had only as long as powerful safeguards are maintained against the exercise of arbitrary power by every branch of the government, by government itself, by all classes of society. Powerful self-restraints are required to ensure political freedom. Nations have frequently wrecked themselves and wrecked the peace of the world because they lusted after a degenerate form of freedom. The Nazis' concept of freedom was to exercise the right to do as they pleased, to exterminate all who stood in their way, to conquer and to dominate the world. They thought of freedom as the right to deny freedom to others. after the First World War. All nations wanted to be free, all nations wanted to be secure. So they built an international organization for peace, the League of Nations. They all wanted freedom from aggression, but they were unwilling to surrender any of their prerogatives, any of their rights of absolute sovereignty. They were unwilling to surrender them to a system of international control and to the necessary restraints of a responsible collective life. And they soon destroyed the League of Nations. And the same mistake seems likely to be repeated again in the case of its successor, the United Nations. Nations cannot be free and arbitrary, free and sovereign in all things at one and the same time. Now there are misguided and subversive individuals, groups in our country, elsewhere, who think that the concept of freedom confers upon them the right to abuse and undermine freedom, to exploit the right of free speech and the opportunities which a free society affords them, to sow hate and discord and prejudice among their fellow citizens, and to incite all forms of vicious intolerance. And such men make a mockery of freedom and betray it. Free men must bring into play powerful, voluntary self-controls and self-disciplines, strong moral controls, if they wish to remain free. And they must also have some great ideals, some noble objectives towards which they intend to move, if they wish to remain free. For man to be free, he must have an ideal and a goal. To be able to sail freely and securely, one must have a chart and a compass, a rudder and an anchor. One must know and follow a charted course. Blind sailing and drifting is not safe sailing. They end in wreckage, shipwreck. And that is true also of human beings. Take, for example, a doctor, a surgeon. A surgeon who is not fully trained in his profession, who is not thoroughly familiar with his science and does not scrupulously observe its laws, who hasn't trained himself, that man is not free to operate on his patients successfully. He is the slave of his own ignorance, his own incompetence, and his own desperate improvisations. A musician who has not trained himself painstakingly through years of practice into the techniques of his art and the laws governing it is simply not free to play in a manner which will do justice to the composition, to his instrument, or to himself. He is the helpless slave of inadequacy and unpreparedness. Freedom to express our essential endowments, that is the power that is in us, and our highest talents, and only these qualities merit the right of free expression. That freedom is achieved only by acquiring discipline, by giving up caprice, and willfulness, and by maturing in constancy and spiritual steadfastness. Freedom is the capacity to enlarge ourselves in the worthy opportunities of our life and in the disciplines of our chosen calling. And so I say, good friends, in answer to the question, when is a man free? A man is free when he is the slave of great moral convictions, as Yehuda Halevi said. I am not bound to win, declared Abraham Lincoln. I am not bound to win, but I am bound to be free. I am not bound to succeed, but I am bound to live up to what light I have. I must stand with anybody that stands right, stand with him when he is right, and part with him when he goes wrong. Abraham Lincoln was a free man who helped to bring freedom, great freedom, to others. When is a man free? Not when he has everything that he wants. To be independent of wants, to be independent of wanting too much, is sometimes the one true highway to freedom. To know how many things we can get along without. When is a man free? Not when he can do anything he pleases, but when, lacking much that he wants, and unable to do everything that he would like to do. Nay more, when he has many masters and carries many burdens, and yet knows how to carve out for himself out of his stubborn environment and his imprisoning obligations, knows how to carve out for himself an inner compensating freedom, and who knows how to retire into that inner world as into a refuge and a sanctuary, that man is free. There was a great philosopher, Epictetus, in ancient times. He was a slave, he was poor, and he was lame. And at his death, he requested that this inscription be put on his tomb, his epitaph. Slave, poor as the poorest, halting as I trod, I, Epictetus, was the friend of God. To be free, my dear friends, is not to have any masters. To be free is to be master of oneself. When is a man free? Not when he says anything that comes to his mind in whatever manner he chooses, regardless of tact and taste and courtesy or social responsibility. Such a man does not talk freely. He talks loosely. His speech does not convey courage, only coarseness. Free speech is responsible speech, because words are weapons. They can wound. They can kill. Life and death are in the power of the tongue, said the rabbis. Our world is turned into a madhouse time and time again. by the unbridled speech of criminal political adventurers who spread their lying propaganda through the world and poison the springs of human thought and action. Freedom of speech and of the press are vital to a free society. But when conscience and a high sense of social responsibility do not control them, they end up in being slanderous propaganda and yellow journalism. Men should be free to express their opinions, but they should be conscience-bound to express them fairly. When is a man free then? Not when he is driftwood on the stream of life, carried along on the pleasant waters of a carefree existence, free from all cares and worries and ambitions, dreamily indolent in a world of sweet contentment. Such a man is not free at all. He is only drugged. Like the lotus eaters in the Odyssey. Such a man's soul is debris, and his life is disintegrated. Such a man moves through life like a fatted and garlanded ox, led to the sacrifice on the altar of total inanity. No man is free who has leisure and nothing else. Few burdens are as heavy to carry as the burden of prolonged and aimless leisure. And so I close. Be free in action, in struggle, in purposeful achievement, to move forward towards a worthy objective across a fierce terrain of resistance, not to be excessively responsive to pressures and prejudices, not to be too easily swayed, but to be vital and aglow in the exercise of a great enterprise, that is to be free, and to know the joy and exhilaration of true freedom. A man is free only when he has an errand to do on earth, and only so long. When is a man free? When he is not the slave of impulse, of petty worries, petty irritations, his chafe, fret, or when he is the slave of false standards, of vain conceits, of rankling envies, of passionate hates, of foolish excesses, and all the sad stockpile of human chains, including those of the obsessed status seeker, these chains which men fasten on themselves and from which they alone can liberate themselves. To find release from the constraints of these petty things which enslave us, to find release from their constraints in the fervent pursuit of some good purpose, whatever it be, that is to be free. And that is to find inner dignity and inner peace.